The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. Another fresh week ahead of us. Four more matches today, and we'll get to what happened across the weekend. I mean, a ton of games, a ton of goals, actually, as well. Even have, I believe, our first firing. Believe it or not, Tunisia are about to can, or have not already canned, their manager, Sabri Lamouchi. It's a tough old world, the World Cup. This doesn't happen very often, actually, at World Cups, but it's happened. Anyway, I'm James Sharman. We have Amy Walsh, Craig Forrest, Daniel Wong, Jimmy Brennan, and Jeff Cole here with you. That is a bit harsh, isn't it? Hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so harsh.
Smash 5-1 yesterday, but I mean, what did they expect? It's Sweden after one Graham Potter.
I expected more, I guess. And it was a rout. I think 5-1 maybe pales in comparison to Germany's 7-1 over Curacao, but it's still a big number to put up to concede five goals. But does it merit a sacking during the World Cup? You've only played the one match? I don't think so.
Maybe because Sweden didn't win a single game in World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, they shouldn't even be there.
Yeah, they got in that really weird kind of backdoor route via Nations League finish, and no one could really explain exactly why. But Graham Potter comes in and suddenly the whole team plays better, right? They play better defensively, and they're actually a really good team. And there were some beautiful goals, by the way. So, firings happen, just not generally after one game at the World Cup. There must be something more going on there, right? There's got to be some behind-the-scenes issues prior to the World Cup. But isn't it more embarrassing, Craig, to fire a manager during the World Cup rather than just waiting? What do they expect? They're going to get out of the group and go on a run?
Has it ever happened?
I don't think it's ever happened.
That's a great question.
I think it may have done, maybe once. I can't think of who it may have been. Maybe look it up, someone.
Football's strange. We see firings in league football all the time that just blow our minds, right? So nothing surprises me anymore.
Well, I mean, Graham Potter's got quite the managerial history, right? I mean, going from Brighton, where he was brilliant, the fast up-and-comer in English football, going to be the next national team manager, goes to Chelsea, and that gong show tarnishes his reputation, is forced to then go back to Sweden. What was the step in between, wasn't there? Did he go somewhere in between? After Chelsea?
I'm not sure he did.
I mean, I'm sure he's just collecting his severance for a while there, right? Because we'll look that up as well. We're prepared for today's show. This stuff's kind of falling on our lap just as we start recording.
Well, I did watch every game this weekend, and all Saturday with Craig Forrest, we watched every game. We squeezed in the Knicks winning the NBA championship, which was fun to watch. And then yesterday, I put myself through the Japan-Netherlands first half, and I was just like, if anybody just turned that channel on and was watching television and watching that game, they'd go, the World Cup is not very good to watch.
That was a great match.
The first half was horrible. The second half was amazing. So if you just kind of logged in and was like going through the first half, it was so boring. And I was thinking, in a comparison to hockey, this is Columbus playing Tampa if you're a Leafs fan. Like, that's what that was yesterday.
So, I thought it was actually good.
Yeah, well, I disagree.
This is because you guys are in a bubble. I'm literally sitting there going, if anybody just came in and just watched that first half, Japan versus Netherlands, I thought it was so boring. I tried.
I thought it was really good, and I think I enjoyed it because of the tactical side. I thought it was really, really good football.
Yes.
Two good teams trying to dictate the tempo, the pace, and get pure possession. I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it anyways from a football perspective.
Mm-hmm. It's a subjective world we live in, Wonger, you know, in sports.
It is.
What might be the greatest match to ever watch in someone might be the worst for another someone else. So you're allowed to not like that match.
Well, I just want to give other people the opportunity to realize that not every match is going to be amazing. And we were talking about, you know, the 7-1 and the 5-1 and all of that's, I guess, what I'm going for is to say, hey, you don't have, if you don't like what you're seeing on the screen, it's okay to change the channel.
But or just wait longer. Yeah. There'll be a match coming up that will really be exactly. Yeah.
But yeah. Longer, just you just like the goals.
No. I like, because I'll tell you, I stayed up late. Dubs and I were talking about it on Thursday night. I stayed up and watched the Czech South Korea game, 2-1, and an amazing match. Even because it was back and forth, there was opportunities. There was a difference in team skill, meaning one team just they were great off the set pieces, the other team a little more tactical. I just thought that was the styles. It's kind of like boxing. Styles show entertainment. And if you get two nations that are just have two sides that are just average, though the chemistry, it doesn't always work. And I think that that's what that match was, at least the first half, the Netherlands Japan game. That's all.
Yeah. I wonder though if, sorry, very, very quickly. I wonder if ex players and coaches enjoy certain games in different ways than perhaps fans like yeah. yourself or myself. You look at certain things as an ex coach / player that we wouldn't. That we wouldn't quite take from a game. We're like, man, this thing's kind of a stinker. But you're like, wow, the tactical battle here is amazing. I love the way that right back is up against that left winger. That's so I could watch that all day. Where we're like, Christ, crappy.
It's probably true.
That though, right?
Yeah, it's 100% right. 100% right. See, I was like, because I like the way Japan plays, and a lot of people don't realize, but when Japan started the J League, they recruited a lot of Brazilians, Brazilian coaches, Brazilian players, and their style of play is so unique in Asia because of that Brazilian influence. Mm. So when I watch them play, just their wide guys, you know, just how fluid and creative they are, their midfielders, the rhythm of the game that they play with, I really enjoy watching Japan play. And especially playing against the Dutch, who are completely different, but are massive. They're a huge team, really big. So the two style of plays, I've really enjoyed watching that match. And then for the Japanese to keep coming back and end up finishing the match at 2-2, I thought it was brilliant. Just two different teams going at it. And I enjoyed that match.
Yeah,
I remember. Go ahead. I just remember back in the 90s, you mentioned that about the Brazilian style, and Japanese coaches were all over the world. They were scouring the teams and witnessing and looking at training and figuring out the best things that would, you know, work for them. We had them at Ipswich. They're all over the place. And then they went back and basically took it the best from everything and figured out the best style that would work for them. And it happened to be the Brazilian style, which is no surprise. And I think it works for them because they're not like a Bosnian side where they're massive and physical. So they have to figure out how to win football games differently. And I think they've done that. And they technically and tactically, they're just spot on.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
You remember Stacks when we played them in Confederations Cup?
Mm-hmm.
Man, they were so good. They were so quick and dynamic. We were chasing shadows at one point.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And the fans, I mean, they are second to none. That was the only game internationally that I, well, whether we walked, we came out on the field and for the warm up, and everybody in the stadium gave us like a standing ovation. Like, it's like, what's this going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're so nice. And then they passed us to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty similar when we would play them as well. And we went on one trip to Japan. I think it was in advance of the 2007 World Cup where we went to Asia a ton. We went to China a ton, but this trip to Japan was part of our preparation for the Women's World Cup in 2007, because also we knew that the Olympics in 2008 were going to be in China as well. So we spent a lot of time out there trying to get acclimated, but you never get acclimated to a team that is tactically aware and technically adept kind of coming at you. And we stayed competitive via our pace and our athleticism. But like, one of my favorite players I ever played with is Homar Isawa, and probably the best footballer I ever had the chance to play with. But what I loved about that Japan-Netherlands game was the fact that it was, you know, a collective structure. You know, they're so resilient, they're so dangerous on the counterattack. And we forget they're missing their captain in Endo, and they're missing Mitoma, they're missing Minamino, right? Like, this is a team that also beat England in March. So I think underestimated slightly, and maybe the Dutch were overestimated, but they weren't going to go away. And I love that with the goal with Kamada, with that decisive header, it was like hurting the Dutch the way that we expected the Dutch to come at them, right? It was like, here's a taste of your own medicine. Take that. It's in the back of the net. And then, yeah, to the fans, I saw something on social media. Like, I think my algorithm is all Scotland, which I adore because I could listen to Flower of Scotland, and obviously JP's family coming from Glasgow, being Celtic fans and like massive Scotland, obviously, supporters. That's all my algorithm is. And that's a delight, but it's equal parts Japan and like how tidy they leave the stadium as fans, and how the team leaves the locker room just pristine, probably in a better state than when it was when they walked in. But there was this one guy being interviewed, maybe Fox News or something. He was brought over and he's like, "I don't speak English, but I am very excited." And like, that is just like the energy of those fans, where it's just unbridled joy. And I feel like that's what the Japanese team expressed on the pitch. Like, there's some pragmatism. And I also just to finish off, like, through the match day one, like, we're not even through all of the groups, but there's less negative football. There's less parking the bus, dropping deep, and it's more attacking, entertaining, free-flowing football. And it's, you know, I know, Wanger, you were displeased with that first half, but I think overall, it's been really entertaining football.
I was left unsatisfied. The first half, fully satisfied and satiated second half. I watched the whole thing. So
it's often the case.
I'm just really grateful that it wasn't Italian coaches that came over to Japan all those years ago. They'd be playing they'd be playing this Catenaccio style Japanese football, you know, just parking the bus and just grinding away results. No, all I can contribute to that conversation is that I had a great sushi dinner last night. There's a bunch of media types. It was really delicious, top notch sushi in Vancouver, as you know. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
It's the best. Let's be honest. It's the freshest. It's the best. It's amazing out there. So, I know Vancouver people have to go, they put up with really bad weather, but you do have amazing sushi. So just look, I empathize with you out there with the bad weather, but your sushi's dynamic and top notch.
Well, I was part of a Shinetti cloak sandwich last night. So I got to tap into their sources and all the information there. They're hiding. No, I'm not. They're professionals. But we did talk a lot about Canada, actually. And it was interesting anyway. But before we get on to Canada, today, four more games. Interesting games, actually. Spain, a favorite in many people's minds, up against Cape Verde. Or as the fisticates may call it, Capo Verde. Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, Belgium, Egypt. That's a good one, isn't it? That's interesting. And Iran against New Zealand. Iran have arrived in the States yesterday. So that'll be a fascinating Cauldron in there, I wonder. I'm very curious. Because there's going to be a lot of Iranian fans in there. A ton, you would think. That would be interesting. I'm sure FIFA might be a little bit nervous. Certainly, the perception for the World Cup might be a little bit concerning. But let's not get into Iranian-US politics just now. We'll save that for a quiet day.
A quiet,
really get into it.
Beer-filled day where it won't be quiet at the end.
But yeah, we're going to go over some more of the games from the weekend. But let's get into some Canada chat, shall we, JC?
It's World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by our friends at Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim's.
So Canada getting set, back in training today. I'll be heading down there in a couple of hours' time. I imagine when we get to talk to Jesse and some players today. How many changes do you perceive we're going to see? There was quite a conversation last night over the salmon rolls about how many how many changes. Some people are thinking they're going to see a few. I don't. I think we might see one, quite honestly. But Craig, what do you expect to see on Thursday? How many changes?
That's a really good question. I think you're right. I think we might see Kyle Larin start. Other than that, I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of changes. But the players that came on, they impacted the game immensely and did a really good job. That Promise David was an inspiration. I wouldn't be unhappy to see him even start up top. But his fitness is obviously not there for 90 minutes, so I wouldn't expect that to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think all the three that came on and made a real difference, Chef, Ali, Ahmed, and Promise, I don't know where they're at as far as how many minutes they can play. But does anyone think there'd be more than one change? Starting change, Jimmy?
No, I don't think so. I think maybe just the one. Kyle Larin comes up the top. And I think they'll probably do the same, but I think they'll make the subs earlier. I thought Ali Ahmed was brilliant when he came on. I wish he could play 90 minutes because he has such an impact on the game. But I think going into this match, I think it'll be the same team apart from Kyle, him starting. And then I think you'll see the subs coming in earlier than what they did last match.
I hope that's the case because the subs were needed. I think the second half kicked off the way that they wanted to start the first versus Bosnia. It was a little bit too slow, weren't quite connected, weren't as precise as they needed to be, and the tempo wasn't there. Second half created that. And then I think Jesse Marsh, we talked about this in our kind of reaction show on Saturday morning. I thought he was masterful in the way that he timed his substitutions and the way he chose his personnel to come on and change the game. I would like to see Ali Ahmed start. I think there's a conversation to be had where Kyle Larin, you might see it as him being punished or not rewarded for scoring that goal. And we know everything around it, like, you know, proving the naysayers wrong and all that stuff. But if that worked, why not keep him on the bench as somebody who can come on? And you go with Tanny up top with John David. I think he stays in there. Jesse Marsh gives him a chance to come out of this slump that he seems to be in. And then you start Ali and you maybe give him a half an hour. You give him a half. And then maybe somebody else comes on to start that second half. And then the other kind of angle to this in the way that Jesse Marsh is looking at the group phase is Nico Seguir, who played a massive role for this team when you had other injuries to the back line and notably to Alistair Johnston. How does he factor in here? You want to keep him fresh. You want him to have his feet underneath him as it pertains to a World Cup. You need to give him minutes. So I don't think he starts, but I think he plays significant minutes versus Qatar. And I also think having Nathan Saliba and Matthew Chouinard not get any time versus Bosnia, I think they need to get into the match. Do I think that Kone is dropped? No. I think you start with that pairing in the middle of the park and Eustachio and Kone. But I think you see at least a half an hour. And hopefully this means that Canada is up, that they've started brightly. But I think you see Nathan Saliba come off the bench and be impactful and make his debut.
That's the dream, right? It's get an early lead, put this essentially to bed, and then you can start managing the minutes a little bit and getting some of these guys. And by minutes, I mean, not even talking about resting players. I'm talking about getting some of those guys some playing minutes, some time on the pitch. Shawani mm-hmm. Saliba in particular, because I'm not sure you can take Kone or Oshtakio off the pitch in a close game. They are by far the top two center midfielders, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, I agree. Look, at the end of the day, this is a must win. You need 3 points, and you got to play your best players. And I understand what Dubs is saying. You know, the game is going to dictate to you what you're going to do and what subs you're going to bring on. And ideal situation, you're 2-0 up, 3-0 up, and you can change whoever the hell you want and give them minutes. But you know, if it's a tight match, it's going to be very difficult to get certain players.
Yeah, we hope we don't see a situation where you have to sub on 3 or 4 attacking players because you're desperate.
Yeah.
Last thing Canada want, right?
I'm going to bring in a comment just from our friend Cryops, who's a great commentator. Something to consider, perhaps March needs to reflect on how to utilize Laren better. His system doesn't favor running chaos, Tanny versus frequent service Laren. 23 goals in 38 games under Herdman, 2 goals in 25 games under Marsh. You see Laren's results at Southampton that demonstrate you need to get him the ball and he'll produce. Agree, disagree, any feelings on that one?
A little context to the goals beforehand. They played a lot of punch bags, racked up the stats.
Oh, it's Southampton.
No. National team.
National team, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. It's true. There was something that Kyle Laren said post-match in his interview on TSN, and it was, I deserve to be starting, paraphrasing, I think. But it was, I deserve to be on the pitch, basically. How much does that work into a player's psyche if he wants to be starting, like everybody wants to be starting, feels like he's delivering but doesn't and producing, but doesn't feel like he's getting kind of the play that he needs, the time that he needs? Is that something that Marsh has to deal with?
Don't you want that from your strikers?
Yeah, of course you do.
You want guys like this stuff. Jesse said on the pre-match press conference, Kyle wasn't happy. I wonder what that means. I bet he was fucking furious. 2013, mark it. I swore.
Oh, 20. Thank you.
I bet he was livid because he'd started the last two games. He'd refound his form at Southampton. We all assumed he was going to start. Mm-hmm. I bet he was livid. And he came on and that wasn't a happy celebration. That was a in your face, everyone celebration. I like those celebrations. An angry celebration. Mm-hmm. They're good celebrations.
Hey, maybe put that on Jesse Marsh. He put a little spark underneath him because he had to look good in the warm-up games. Yeah. And if Jonathan David wasn't Jonathan David, would we be talking about a change there? Because he's really not been potent, to say the least. You know,
it's a great point. I mean, at what point does the name value matter no longer? It would matter. Yeah. Listen, let's be hypothetical here. Two games in, you have 1 point. You're desperate. The big name has done nothing. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
If you're going to pick one player out of the Canadian team and you didn't know anything, and you said, there's a player out there that plays for Juventus, who was it? Who is it? Where would he be on that list?
Luke de Fougerolle.
Wow.
There'd be
five, six guys, mm-hmm. maybe seven before you'd go, wow, if you didn't know, you wouldn't be picking Jonathan David.
But I don't think he's valued by Jesse Marsh and he's kept in. And he got subbed out, much to my surprise. So again, like the fact that Jesse Marsh went big, didn't start Kyle Laren, and then substituted Jonathan David and also substituted Stefan Eustachio for Jonathan Osorio. Like those were big calls. And that gives me hope that Jesse Marsh is willing to deviate slightly from what the plan is. But if you're the gaffer here, you're the manager, you're managing tactics, you're managing approaches to each of these group games, but you're man managing first of all, and you're able to manufacture that type of reaction from Kyle Laren, you're doing a brilliant job, in my opinion. And as it pertains to Jonathan David, he does so much work in Marsh's system. Yeah, it was a poor performance. He misses that sitter, which you think would just be in the back of the net any other day. But with the form that he's in, nothing's a given now. But the work that he does out of possession is of utmost value to Jesse Marsh. So I think he gives him another game. If he gets another subpar performance, I think then you see Jonathan David maybe hit the bench and then he goes with somebody else. But right now, the way that they've played the last 2 years under Jesse Marsh, there is one player that is, he's talked about Luc de Fougerolles in Copa America being first name on the team sheet when he was 18 years old. So talk about a boost of confidence for him. But other than that, in specific matchups, Jonathan David is the first name on the team sheet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he still is for sure. But, and it's not as if there's some young stud screaming to get minutes. How can you leave this guy out? You're still going with the old veteran. Firstly, the old veteran isn't very old. John David is still a pretty young guy. Yeah. And just the depth, I mean, that would be a huge call.
Yeah.
To drop John.
Do you know what I liked about it watching that match? And I think this is where I kind of tipped my hat anyways towards Jesse was I was like, that is brave. That's brave taking Jonathan David off at that time, especially when you're down a goal. And in those situations, you tend to keep your best players, your goal scorers on the pitch. Yeah. And for him to go, no, you're not performing, get off. Mustakio, come on, you're off too. That for me, that's a brave manager, because most managers wouldn't do that because they want to try to keep everybody healthy or happy. But I thought tactically it was very good, and I like what he did, and I like the subs that came on. So I thought Jesse's performance was very good and tactical, very, very good.
Yeah, that's what
I love.
We
the
said
way Jesse tells us. I love that Jesse always says this after a match when things go right. He'll say, you know, yeah, we made the subs in the second half, which proved to be a very good decision.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah. Yeah, well done, Jesse.
Or the training sessions. The training sessions are the best.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I've ever seen in my life.
Just like Wonger in it. Hey, that was a good question. Bill and I ask great questions.
Every once in a while, that's all.
Yeah. All right, so you're playing guitar, and I think in World Cups, this always happens, that 4, 5 or 6 days between games, we can really begin to elevate opponents. So, oh my, this is going to be a tough one. Qatar is awful. They're terrible. that Swiss game should have been 4 or 5-0. Mm-hmm. If not for the goalkeeper, what was his name? Mahmoud Abinada. He was brilliant.
And yeah, he stood on his head.
Part of the team, fair enough. I do you expect to see another performance like that? It means we're getting balls on goal, which is a good thing, I suppose. But Qatar don't scare me at all. Even with Canada's finishing woes, this could be the breakout game. Don't you get that impression, Craig?
We've been saying that for a while. We just don't make life easy for ourselves. Like, doesn't matter who we play, and chances that we need to create to win football games, way too many. And we've seen some teams out there have just been ruthless. That I mean, look at the Americans. Where did that come from? Like, that's what we need. We need to be able to pot goals and take those chances and make life easier for the team, because that would, you don't want to be 1-0 like we saw with Qatar, and then they snatch one. Like, it's just, they're always going to be in it unless you put them to bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw a headline that called it a catastrophe for the Swiss. Oh, I thought that's quite good.
That's excellent. Yeah,
that's good.
Save that one. Let's save that for the thumbnail. Hopefully we wouldn't have to use it.
No, I know.
But, oh God. Let's not do that. Let's not use it.
No, but for everybody's psyche, and then also their positioning in the group and the way that they need to grow throughout the tournament. Like, we need experience playing tournament football and growing into each match, dispatching of a different opponent in maybe a slightly different way, using different players. But this team needs to open up for at least a couple of goals, and they need to do it in the first 15 minutes. I'm not saying if you don't do it in the first 15 minutes, everything's lost, but it will be so good for this team to just feel that weight lifted. So I think if one guy does it, doesn't matter who it is, I think everybody will feel a sense of relief, and then they'll have that freedom to play and just express themselves and play to their potential on the day, like for the individuals, but also for the collective. So you just need one person to do it. and then it'll just be the relief, and then hopefully the floodgates open.
Canada can't compete, though, Sharms, with the player bonuses that is rumored that the Qatari player, Boualem Kuki, I think that's how you say his name, was set to receive a U.S. $3 million cash bonus and a Rolls-Royce Phantom for scoring Qatar's equalizer that gave them their first point ever. So I think if you're Canada, I think Kyle Aaron, I think he's due a $80 of triangle money from Canadian Tire. So I think that's what he gets. And I think our friends at Tim Hortons get him a free $12 gift card. You can load those. So Kyle, congratulations for your goal.
And shawarma for life.
From Osmos. Yeah.
Well, there is a prince in Qatar that's making himself comfortable in Vancouver with the top four floors of the Pan Pacific and pickleball court.
Really? Oh, that's the guy. That's right. Maybe you're saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. His paddleball or pickleball, right, Craig?
Yeah.
Different world entirely.
Are we forgetting though, Sharms? Like, yeah. I know this was always the must win. This was always the match where we needed to go out and get 3 points. So nothing's changed despite the fact that everybody's locked in at 1 point and I think exact same goal differential in the group, right? Because 2-1-1 draws. But I think we're also forgetting to contextualize that this is our Canadian men's national team first point at a World Cup. So I'm not saying you rest on your laurels because you've gone out and done that. It should have been 3 points because there really was enough chance creation and dangerous chances that, you know, the goal off the line or the ball off the line from Richie. And then really Kyle, if he'd taken that on his first touch, that again, great run from Richie on the left-hand side, he could have had a brace on the day. And we're talking about, very different permutations and very different mindset, I think, heading into Qatar. But again, it doesn't change. But I think you have to celebrate that in a sense, recognize where you are, and then close that off, and then just go into this Qatar match, eyes wide open. But again, building, I think we're forgetting that this team has had a litany of injuries. It's been very difficult. And then there's talk that Alphonso Davies might get minutes against Qatar.
Yeah, like Arash was saying that, right?
If that happens, like, we've lost the plot, right? I talked about all the guys that have played a critical role for Canada over the past year plus, that Jesse Marsh could easily slot into an 11 and be quite confident with these guys, like a Nico Seguir or a Chouinard or a Nathan Saliba. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think they're going to play a bigger role. You don't need Alphonso Davies right now to beat Qatar. And I think you have to show confidence in the guys that are in front of you without requiring, this, like, I don't know what it would be like, break the glass and pull the fire alarm and put Davies in and then risk not having him for the rest of the tournament.
We have Arash Madani on tomorrow's show. And I'm going to ask him about that because he was talking about it over the weekend. He'd been told prior to the first match that the plan was to get Fonzie some minutes, maybe in the second match. He was literally, this isn't a rash, but Fonzie was literally in flip-flops in that first match. Hmm. You don't go from flip-flops to minutes within 6 days. You just don't. Now, we'll see today at training. Is he with the main group? We'll find out. I mean, potentially, I could see a scenario where he gets minutes in the Swiss game, potentially, if he gets, 10 days of training under his belt. But yeah, it sounds like that would be madness. And you don't need him against Qatar, like you said. Even they're going to stick 9 men behind the ball, 10 men behind the ball. We saw that against the Swiss. We know Canada hates that. But that isn't generally where Fonzie excels anyway in those types of games.
Mm-mm. Sorry, Jimmy and Dubs, what is, because you both played out, what does his training look like right now? Like, if he's injured, is he, or coming back, is he on a bike afterwards? Is he, like, how is he getting his fitness up? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, I think the latest reports, even though Sharms is saying like 6 days ago he was in flip-flops or whatever it was, they have ramped up his training. Like when we saw him live at Stade Saputo for that friendly versus Ireland, it was very much individual training in his boots with this ex-decathlete, you know, that's been sent over from Bayern Munich to really shepherd him through and ensure that he's well taken care of as he gets back towards training, even if it's managed with the full team. But he's apparently sprinting now, which is good. But sprinting doesn't mean that you can replicate that over the course of 10 minutes or half an hour or an hour on the pitch, right? You have to get your base fitness and you have to get those reps in so that your recovery can then be tested, and they're looking at your metrics and how it's feeling and everything around it. So to your question about like the bike or a pool, like there will be rehab protocols in place, but then also off of the pitch, things that they're doing to increase his aerobic base. But you have to do the on-field reps and you have to get that up to a point. Like we saw, Sharms, when we were talking about what we saw at Stade Saputo, the match day minus one, we saw it with a different member of the physios or the medical staff. We saw Zoran Bassong, we saw Ali Ahmed being taken through their paces. So maybe there's a similar line that can be drawn with where Ahmed was on June 5th versus where he was on June 12th in that opening match to be able to get in some minutes. And then it's not exactly the same, but it'll be a similar protocol and process to get Fonzie back and ready to go. And then they will be very closely managed minutes at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse was speaking him up on Thursday's press conference saying he'd made great progress. He had an MRI last week. Came up great. He's strong, which all bodes really well for seeing him at some point in this World Cup. It's just the next match, it doesn't seem like that's the match. Because even if you're down a goal and you're desperate, I'm not sure Alphonso Davies is the solution. He's a left back. We know what he can do, but we know what Qatar and how they play. Right, Jimmy?
Yeah. Look, it's going to be a tough one. Like Dubs is saying, you know, you got your return to train and then return to play. And if he's at the return to play, that's all about... It's not just the running on the pitch. It's more, you know, the change of directions, the deceleration. How does his body handle that? And when he, if he's fit and he's ready to play, I think at some point in the match, Jesse will probably put him on. He's used to playing against teams that play a low block, playing for Bayern Munich. Every team that he plays against is playing in a low block. He knows how to get in behind. He knows certain patterns and runs and movements. When you watch his Qatari side, I mean, at times they had six across the back. They had nine players in the box. And we've got our movement has to be bang on and how to penetrate them. The speed of play, the tempo's got to be quick in that final third. And can Fonzie do that? Absolutely he can. We've seen him against Bayern Munich breaking down teams and getting in behind and putting that ball into the box or getting his goal. So I think... if there's an opportunity for him to play in this match and come on, and he's ready to for that return to play, why would you not put Fonzie on the pitch?
So if he's in return to play protocol this week, and they always announce that before training, who's in what stage of their recovery. If he's in return to play today, you think there's a good chance he'll get some action?
I think he could get some minutes for sure. If he's ready to go, then why wouldn't you put him on?
If he's ready, but it's just, do you go from a guy that's sitting in a gurney during the last match on Friday because he can't even warm up with the rest of the team to play minutes in a World Cup game, you know, 6 days later?
If people want to know what a gurney is, look up my reference to MASH. That's all.
Yeah. He was actually on a gurney. He had both legs up at one point, straight, which if you got tight hamstrings, you can't do. I can't do it anyway. There's always a little bend in the knee because the hamstrings are so tight.
No, why rush it? I don't think, even if he's close, you know, part of your return to play to regaining full fitness is getting valuable minutes. So it all depends on a game state, right? If they're able to, you know, if they're up 2-0
at half, you don't have to play them.
You don't play him. And then you save him. But I don't even think if you quote unquote need him, you have other players who can do the job as per that triple substitution with Ali, Schaff, and Promise. You have players who can threaten. But I do think if it's Alphonso Davies and Jimmy, what you're talking about with the deceleration, your actual physical handbrakes are your hamstrings. So this is why this is so delicate and critical. But if he's dropped in and can give Jesse Marsh and his team 15 minutes, it's not going to be at left back. I see it being, you know, this age old debate. Do we need him higher up the pitch, or do we need him to play left back the way that he plays with Bayern Munich and has that runway, doesn't do a whole lot of defending because of that team versus Canada. I think it's a very different animal. I think he gets it at left wing. I think you put him in as a more offensive weapon versus at left back.
It's going to be an interesting week, isn't it?
It's already been an interesting week. It's been a really interesting week. Yeah.
Well, the math is to win the group. The math is Canada beats Qatar by more than one goal. Switzerland beat Bosnia by one goal, and then match day three, Bosnia beats Qatar, and Canada can draw Switzerland, and that should be enough. I believe that's the math to win the group. So we're actually at that point. We're talking about winning the group. Perhaps we should just be talking at this point about getting through. Are we getting ahead of ourselves, these big-time Charlies? Well, look at them now. I think they're all about the World Cup.
Well, they got 3 points against Qatar, and then we can talk about that.
We have to do that first.
We were on the couch talking. That sounds a little creepy. We were watching the game together, the match together, and Craig goes, "This is great for Canada. They can win the whole group." And I'm like,
oh, yeah, that's Craig then, as opposed to now. I just get through Qatar first.
Well, I don't know. It applies,
but you got to do things you can't be thinking about Switzerland game. This team is not thinking about that.
No.
Hopefully they're in a little bubble and they get pestered by the likes of Sharms and the rest of them.
Yeah. No, they're not getting pestered. So do you see that video of Fonzie walking down the street and he saw someone with his and the guy with his shirt on and the guy had no idea who he was? So Faisal Khamisa was going out for dinner with his mate 2 days ago, whenever it was, some restaurant here in Vancouver. And Fonzie walks in with his buddy and just sits down. And Faisal was a good guy, so it didn't bother him. He's like, it's time off. But like, no one in the restaurant knew who was there. It was Alfonso Davies. We're still at that point in Canada.
We talked about this before, and Craig, I think, even said, of course people can walk around, our players can walk around and not be noticed. And they've proved it, right?
Yeah. They wouldn't recognize him if he had a jersey on.
Full kit.
The most recognizable football player in the country by a mile, outside Christine Sinclair.
It'd be a great social experience.
I think that's most sports in this country. Players can walk around and people have no idea who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about Jimmy? In your heyday at TFC, you know, when the team was like the...
I got swarmed. I couldn't go anywhere. It was ridiculous. Lies. Yeah, I couldn't even get into a rush. I was like, no, it's not even worth going out.
Elsewhere this weekend, let's get some is JC around still? Yeah, there he is. Hey JC, let's roll some big questions, shall we?
One, two, three, four.
Ring, ring, what's that sound? It's a big question that needs answer. Ring.
What was the question again?
Well, the question is, out of the other matches, what piqued your fancy? We had Morocco tying Brazil 1-1. We had Haiti falling to Scotland 1-0. Great moment there for the Scots. Australia beating Turkey. What a performance by Australia, 2-0. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, Germany smashing Curacao 7-1. Ivory Coast with a late one over Ecuador 1-0. We mentioned the Dutch and the Japanese 2-2 and Sweden beating Tunisia 5-1. So Craig, what match scream to you, yeah, the World Cup's here?
You know, I have to say that moment for Curacao was like, that was amazing. That was amazing. They, in the first 20 minutes, they had so much energy and you knew that wasn't going to last, but they played quite well. And then to nick a goal and tie it up was, that was pretty amazing.
I think it was Dick Advocate as well, crying on the bench where you were like, oh, wow.
Just and we're all like, we're like in Dick sport, Advocat. Right? He's there.
Almost two occasions, right? Because I think he was like full on crying during the anthem. And then like when they got that goal, waterworks almost started again.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's so great to see.
It really is.
Curacao. Mm-hmm. What do you call someone from Curacao?
I didn't take Dick Advocat as a guy that would shed a tear, but obviously wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great moment, though. And then the water break came. Oh, sorry, the commercial break came. for the end of the first quarter.
Once and, again, Craig and I on the couch, Craig went off on the, like Thierry Henry, and talked about, Thierry Henry went on a full rant about this second quarter versus first quarter.
Well, not so much a rant, but just the fact that it's changed the game.
Yes.
Whether we like it or not, it's here. But it's, we looked at the end of the first quarter, end of the third quarter in NBA. What is the break time? It's about 3:15, 3:30.
3:30 for a national game, 2:30 for a local game. So, yeah,
it's, NBA. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's more than the end of the first quarter if you look at a sport like the NFL, because it's stop-start anyway. But those are really... Like, you could be on the front foot, and then all of a sudden you've got a hydration break. You could be on the back foot. You also have 3 minutes to have a breather, so it changes the way you approach games. So it's completely changed. This is brand new to teams, and they have to be able to manage it. And I think most of them are, and they're tweaking the way they play the game and tactically change the game in amongst these hydration breaks, because everything seems to change. And I'm looking even at the, you know, those little momentum graphics that they're showing, and there's often after a hydration break, you see the momentum change. You
see like a little spike. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting how people, teams are going to deal with that.
Yeah. It is. It's frustrating as well, because you're right, especially if you're on the front foot and you got the momentum and you're pushing forward and you got that water break, it allows the opposition now to adjust and they can change tactically. Which in a match, it's hard for a manager to be yelling out and trying to change your tactics and overload certain areas or protect this area, and they're allowed to do that. So it changes the whole dynamic of the game, and the game does swing the other way at times.
I think a hydration break is a bit of a misnomer, especially in a climate-controlled stadium like Dallas. I think it's no accident that, I mean, I know, Wonger, you're complaining about the first half, but like that, to me, is the best match so far in this World Cup. And it's because it's on a pristine pitch and it's climate controlled. You don't really need these hydration breaks. So maybe you just call them commercial breaks and you call them tactical breaks. You know, maybe you don't need Milan Borjan in Qatar going down and you get like your little tactical respite and a chance for players to have water there. It's just all of it is happening at this tactical break. And then what's going to come next at the next major tournament is it's time to fit in a 3-minute song by whoever the build, like the top build artist is at that point. And then we're really doubling down on the commercialization.
And as we know, songs have gotten shorter. Yes. Yeah. Songs have gotten shorter. So pop music is a little, but do you like this or not?
I hate it.
Okay, good.
I hate the direction that it's taking the game in. It's completely changing the game.
Yes. Thank you.
Do you know when you just mentioned there, Dubs, about the keeper going down, this is another issue that I have. Now, I like when, you know, if a player goes down, he's got to go off for a minute, right? But we've seen a few times now where keepers are going down. Now, nothing happens. Obviously, a keeper can't come off. But I think if the keeper does that and he goes down and he needs a little treatment, I think a player should have to come off for a minute. Yeah.
WSL's doing that. They're trialing that this year.
Yeah. So, because I don't understand why the player has to go off, but then if the keeper goes down, he gets treatment, nothing happens. Yeah. And that's another chance to kill momentum.
I think that's coming next for IFAB. But Jordan Wilson, I was on One Soccer last night, and he made a great point. Like, you have IFAB and FIFA putting all these rules in to curb all the time wasting, to try to get an uptick in the fluidity, and then you turn a game of two halves into a game of four quarters. And these built-in breaks, like it just seems antithetical to what they're trying to institute.
Out of all the rule changes over the years and the changes to the game that FIFA have tried, isn't this the worst?
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else. I mean, okay, VAR. I hate VAR. But you kind of understand VAR. This is just stupid.
What, the water breaks?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's not new, water breaks.
No, but when it's actually hot and it's not 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, should there be hydration officials making sure everyone's getting hydrated?
That's next.
You know, make sure you get that liter of water in you. Otherwise, no, you haven't finished that bottle of water. Mm-hmm. Get back out there.
Yeah. So, how's your pee in this?
That's right. Is it clear? Okay, we're good. We can continue.
It's crazy, though.
No, Virgil van Dijk was talking about it post-match, and he was saying it shouldn't just be a sweeping change that applies to every single one of the matches at this World Cup. Like there should be an official, maybe it's a hydration official, and you're assessing the situation once teams arrive on site, or it's 3 hours before and you take a look at the conditions. And if it's above, you know, certain temperature, Fahrenheit or centigrade and humidity, and then if it dictates that you need the hydration breaks, then you use them. But if you're playing in a climate controlled stadium, you just play. You don't need it. You use common sense. How about that?
Well, imagine playing in Europe in the wintertime. Right. And they try and bring these things in for the broadcasters. So when it's like freaking, you know, 6 degrees, oh, we need that hydration break now. No, you don't.
Soup time.
We know why.
That's right.
We know why it's there.
Yeah, we know why it's there.
We don't have to discuss that.
Six more 30-second commercials.
Come on.
Six more 30-second commercials.
Right. It's not a rule change for that reason. The rule change, like the 5 seconds on the throw-ins, like, I like that.
I like that.
Substitutions, excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah.
But this one has the most effect, though, Craiger. This one has the most effect of changing actual play on the pitch. It's changing everything. And we talked about how important a 3-minute break at this level of athlete, how important that is. Your whole game plays. You can now train for a 22.5 minute half or a 20, it's nuts. Mm-hmm. Instead of a 50 minute, your training changes. And if they continue going down this road, it's now you've changed the actual spirit of what the legacy football means. And I think that's what bothers me so much. And maybe me and Thierry Henry are spirit animals. Just say that.
Well, there's going to be all of the deep dive on analytics and the stats for, you know, what these hydration breaks are introducing. There's a reason why when one team scores and they go back to the center circle, the other team's taking the kickoff, why coaches do this. Because teams are at their most vulnerable after scoring a goal. So you've introduced two other moments in the game that have completely changed the game state. So we're going to see an uptick in goals, and you're going to see swings of momentum, and it's going to result in changing the result completely and changing these little moments in the game. I hate you, Infantino.
Yeah, it's a crying shame. I mean, that being said, though, isn't it funny, though, that all the crap around this World Cup, the politics, the ICE agents, the ticket prices, the empty seats, that's all kind of gone away, and we're pissed off about players having a break halfway through the first half. That's been like the big negative of this World Cup, is that.
It's a giant, fluid, shiny fantastic. Object. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Hey, look at this. Great.
But you said this, Charms, to be fair, you said this would happen. And I think Jimmy said, as soon as both of you both said, as soon as this, the matches on the pitch start, all this other stuff will be seen. And it's sad, but it is. It's like we're goldfish, right? We're six goldfish going, look at this thing. Look at this thing. I could grouse about this thing. Yeah.
I mean, there are reporters, journalists out there writing stories on the other stuff, but no one's reading that stuff. Because I want to hear about Scotland beating Haiti and the celebrations and the Tartan army going to Fenway Park. You see that last night?
March
to Fenway Park, and then they're chanting this, you know, flower of Scotland at the Boston.
And the boogie woogie at Fenway, like the Fenway person in charge of the music knew exactly what they were doing, and it was brilliant.
It's amazing.
So good.
Yeah. Any other games pick your fancy? We've got about
Craig
Morocco.
Yeah, Craig. Which one?
Morocco, Brazil. Yeah. I thought incredible. Morocco is ridiculous.
They're contender, right?
I'm watching it and I'm going, okay, you know, this is the chance for them to show that the last World Cup wasn't a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. Like this is a serious team. They are so good to watch. You know, if I'm Scotland or Haiti and I'm watching this game, I'm terrified of Morocco. But I'm looking at Brazil going, oh, I think we can get something out of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you know, it's crazy. Morocco was just so good. And Brazil, they have nothing. They offered me nothing in that match. And I think that proved why everybody at the beginning of the World Cup was talking about France is going to win or Spain's going to win, one of the European teams. Nobody that you spoke to, I'm sure, mentioned Brazil.
No.
Nope.
Nobody. But then it just proved it when you watched them the other day. I was like, they are terrible. They offer nothing.
You just look at that team, the 11. We mentioned it a couple of weeks back when we were previewing certain teams. And every World Cup, you look at Brazil, like, wow, they got two or three absolute game changers. Wow, these guys are special. I don't see it in this team. They've got, obviously, they're good players. But there's no one that you go, wow, that's a little bit special. He's got special quality.
Yeah, they don't tend to have that Brazilian swagger that we've seen in the past.
No, they've lost their aura.
Yeah, they really have.
We're talking about passes that are like the marrying type. And that Brahim Diaz pass to Sabari for that goal for Morocco, that was the type of pass that you want to marry. That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But just the finish as well, knowing where the keeper is, and he lifts it because he knows the keeper can't use his hands now. Because if you go low in that situation, the keeper's going to use his feet.
You're right.
But I thought it was just clever. He just looked, keeper's outside the box, just lift it now.
And well, he also knows it's Alisson, right?
But he knew Alisson's
the best goalkeeper one-on-one in the world, probably, with his feet down low in those positions. So, yeah, over the top. And what a great goal that was.
Amazing.
Vinny Jr., I mean, his goal was pretty special, too. Let's be honest. Vinny Jr.
Mm-hmm. He's a special player.
Yeah, Craig had a great breakdown for me during the replays. So, Craig, why don't you take it away on that goal?
Bono overprotecting his near post a little bit. But also, what's the defender doing? Letting him come inside. Like,
yeah, you're totally right.
Wide. He comes inside, and as a goalkeeper, you're now going, okay, he's got options. He can swing it in this post. He can go near post. It's not a good position to be in.
No. The defending was poor. Like, Elneny, he's, I don't know what he was doing. But then even Diop's got to step over and close that down.
Yeah. Because
he just stood there and goes, I'll block it. But not in that situation, when Vinny gets in there, and as soon as he comes back to his right, Diop's got to go to the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a couple of bits of defending there from Morocco that let themselves down and obviously isolate the keeper. But
yeah, Vinny's a guy, right, that you say, if anyone has that extra X factor in Brazil, it's probably him. But I think we, as great as he is, and he's one of the world great players, but we kind of elevate him because there aren't that many on that Brazil team. I don't think you put a Vinny shoulder to shoulder with a Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, Ronaldo level. No. He's just not. Great player, love him, but he's not that level. Australia were fantastic to watch as well, by the way. I thought that that young team, 24 years of age, my God, and a gutsy call, Popovich drops Matt Ryan, Patrick Beach comes in, my God, what a game he had in goal. This kid, Nestori Erankunda and Connor Metcalf, like,
wow. The pace.
Oh my God.
Blistering pace.
Yeah.
Frightening.
Oh yeah.
Frightening. Very quickly, let's get some footy picks, JC.
Are you ready?
Ring, ring. Burp, burp, burp. It's 40 picks.
It's 40 picks.
Okay, very quickly, I've got a little parlay here, courtesy Ooh. BetMGM. Why not? This actually pays pretty well. $5 will win you $25. Spain winning today. Pretty That's good bet. Belgium winning today.
Bit of a reach.
Yeah, good bet.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Egypt, decent team, but Belgium, you know, big favorites in that one. Uruguay beating Saudi Arabia. Okay.
Yeah.
And Iran beating New Zealand. They're the favorites in that match, too.
I love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
$3.90.
So a dollar gets you almost $4.
Sure.
Yeah.
One piece of sushi.
And what if you picked Saudi to beat Uruguay?
Well, now you
just, because we know what Saudi Arabia is like on the first match of their tournaments.
Yeah, that's true.
Ask Argentina, right? Last time, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, that's on BetMGM. So earn some money today. Easy. Go for the favorites. All right, we're out of time here, everyone. Make sure that you follow us on all our various platforms, including our YouTube channel. We have a Patreon now, so for $3 a month, we'll get some extra content sprinkled in there as well. Our YouTube actually numbers are going up, 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 up all the time. We're getting some good some good what was I say? Friction. Friction is a good word.
Well, that's traction.
Traction.
Traction. Yeah.
Friction is a little yeah.
That was Wonger and Forrest on the couch watching the matches.
That's right. Well, good looking couch.
It was.
Just talking about whatever pops up.
All right, everyone. So this has been Footy Prime. I am James Sharman. That's Amy Walsh. That's Craig Forrest. That's Dan Wong. That's Jimmy Brennan. That's Jeff Cole. We're back same time, same place tomorrow. Cheers very much for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Great show,
By the way, for our anyone who's still listening on the back end, Tunisia also fired their head coach in 98.
Oh,
really?
Only the time it happened.
Really? In the tournament.
Yeah, in the tournament.
Also,
after the first game.
As we're going back in our previous conversations and for some research here, Craig Forrest, you should know that Graham Potter was actually West Ham's manager.
West Ham.
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Pretty memorable stint.
We should have kept him, maybe. We're idiots. Anyway.